Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Thursday, July 31st, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker, CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Also this half hour, we'll look at the cash grain market with Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. Lisa Brox will be by with her latest backyard industry episode on the trials and tribulations of growing basil in the garden. And Todd Gleason digs into the U.S. Census of Agriculture report to discover a few key nuggets. And we'll have the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Let's see how futures settled on this Thursday afternoon. Hard red winter September wheat settled at 625 and three quarters, up 8 3/4. December, 639, up 6 3/4. Soft September wheat settled at 530 1/4, up 3. December, 550 1/4, up 3/4. September corn settled at 357, down 4 3/4. December, 367, down 4 1/2. March, 379 1/2, down 4. July, 395 1/4, down 4. August soybeans settled at 1224 1/2, up 4. September, $10.99 3/4, down 2 1/2. November, 1082, up 3/4. Go out to May, 1104, up 1 1/2. August soybean meal, 391.30, up 370. August soybean oil, 36.11, up 6 cents. Last trades now, August live cattle, 157.72 1/2, down 212 1/2. And August lean hogs, 118.52 1/2, down 62 1/2. And those are today's settlements from Chicago.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says relief from dryness is expected in the driest areas from the southwestern Corn Belt into southern Illinois and western and central Kentucky Tuesday into Friday of next week. Rain is not likely to be heavy in very many locations, however, and stress to crops will likely quickly return without follow-up rain. If follow-up rain does not occur by the middle of August, stress to crops, especially soybeans, in the driest areas could become more serious and yields could decline. Rain will increase Sunday into Monday in northern parts of the western Corn Belt and will spread across the remainder of the Midwest by Friday of next week. The rain will provide a timely boost in topsoil moisture and will help ensure favorable conditions for crops and high yield potentials continue in much of the Midwest outside of the driest parts of the region. A large part of the eastern Corn Belt will receive at least some rain in advance of next week's rain event, and that rain and the mild temperatures expected will help to perpetuate highly favorable conditions for crops. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises. He is stationed in Mandeville, Louisiana, although that's not where he is at the moment. Good afternoon, Dan. Hello, Dan. Okay, we seem to have lost Dan off the phone line. We will go ahead and see if we can call him and bring him on back. Having difficulty connecting with Dan Zwicker. He's on the road today, but joining us is Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Pete.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for coming on short notice. Appreciate it very much. So the marketplace today, corn, it was the one commodity that caught your eye to the downside. What was going on with that commodity?
Well, the idea is that July makes corn, and we had a great July, and corn's made, even though we haven't had rain in a few places for a while. But there's good subsoil moisture, and there's good rows, number of rows, and all of that. So idea is that we've had such a great July, we're going into August, that July the corn is made, and that we've got a huge crop, and that we need to go lower.
What would happen if we came back next week and these advertised rain events, the one that's supposed to be pretty well across the Corn Belt and actually hit some of the drier areas, southern Illinois into the southwest, end up being misses? Does that change the scenario and the narrative?
I think the narrative will be on the beans. It'll make beans roar, and the beans will help drag corn back up some. But I think in general, the idea is in there ingrained that it's going to be a 14 billion crop, and we're going to have 2 billion carry out, so corn doesn't need to go anywhere unless it's drugged by something else.
So do you think that will actually be the kind of numbers or that we would see in about 2 weeks from crop production, and WASDE reports that they would lean that strong and to be suggestive of the numbers that you gave us.
Yeah, I think that's that. I think that's what's in people's minds, if that's what will happen. Now, we don't know what will happen, but that's what's in the industry's mind.
And in the soybeans have been very interesting in their trade in the last couple of weeks. Ever since we gapped lower on July the 7th, we've essentially been in a sideways trading pattern, 61 cents or thereabouts. We're still right now about the mid-range of that trading range. Is it possible that given the strong demand that we're seeing in new crop soybeans, that there's really not a lot more downside in the soybean market?
I doubt that. I think we're just sideways now until we actually find out what's there. If we get rains, I think we could easily make new lows by a dollar or two. I think that where we're at right now, like you said, is it's just at the last week. We had a 55 low, and then within a week we had 17 high, and we're 86 is the middle of it. We closed at 82 today after being at 86 half the day. So I think we're still just in a sideways range until we find more about what the size of the soybeans are. If it doesn't rain, I think we could go back and make a new high next week. If it does rain, I think we would easily make a new low next week.
What is your look on the wheat look like today?
Wheat was weird today. We had it both sides, and I don't know really why it's up, except for the war whatever they call it in Ukraine and Russia, because a lot of the wheat, world wheat, comes from there.
Mm-hmm.
That's about the only reason I see for support. As we've gone north in our wheat country, the wheat has gotten better and better quality, both yield and quality. But the world has tons of wheat available. So the only reason I know that it would be going up is this time of year we're about done with harvest in the U.S. and in the parts of the northern hemisphere. And when that happens, we usually go back up towards December. But wheat's harvested 10 out of, or maybe even 12 out of 12 months a year. And right now we have plenty of it available worldwide, and our crop is getting bigger.
Thank you very much, Pete.
Have a great one.
Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
There are two really big points about farmland an ag economist from the University of Illinois has been able to glean from the last U.S. Census of Agriculture. Todd Gleason has more on the average size of farms and the number of acres in production.
Here is a commonly heard phrase in farm country. Farmland, they're not making any more of it. This is true, but it does come in and out of production. And contrary to popular belief, even in the state of Illinois, there's more farmland today than there was 5 years ago, says University of Illinois ag economist Todd Keithy.
Farmland loss is not as such a big issue in the United States anymore. Illinois actually gained less than 1%, but it did gain between the 2007-2012 census. And the relative size of farms in the state is relatively unchanged from 2005 to 2012. When we look at sort of acres operated, and most of the farms actually still operate under 180 or 200 acres.
So there are a lot of small farms. However, they do not sell a lot. The biggest area of growth by sales in the state of Illinois came in the largest farms, or those with gross sales of more than $500,000.
So we've seen a pretty big rise in that, in those numbers. But not really a big substantial change of sort of the small farms that you would expect, right? The stories that we kind of hear among the agricultural sector.
It is a nicety afforded by the construct of the Ag Census that broadly captures all types of farms from the very small to the very large. The definition of a farm is any parcel that could produce $1,000 of gross sales in a fiscal year.
One of the nice things from a research perspective, but one of the challenging things from sort of getting a from a farm management perspective is the definition that the USDA uses is so inclusive that it captures a lot of people who are sort of retired farmers or hobby farmers. I mean, that's what really accounts for sort of the bulk of the farm number captured by the USDA.
The broad takeaway is twofold. First, farmland is not disappearing across the United States. It has, in fact, remained very stable over the last decade. Secondly, while farming may not be the primary economic activity of those operating smaller acreages, there are many, many of them. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more. Slow cooked over a wood-fired smoker. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana.
Coming up next, Lisa Brautz finds out that growing basil in the garden can be full of disappointment in her latest edition of Backyard Industry.
There's an uninvited guest in my garden this summer, and maybe in yours too. Basil pesto is one of my favorite summer foods. With my first successful garlic crop ever under my belt and several Genovese basil plants finally taking off after a chilly and wet spring, my household was looking forward to pesto overload into the fall months. After a few harvests, though, I was on the lookout for a scourge I experienced last year in my garden that killed my basil, which was a difficult concept for me to even understand. Basil's my garden's stalwart. It's able to stand up to just about anything Central Illinois serves up. Heat, bugs, drought. But I first noticed symptoms a month ago.
I've got five plants, and all of them have the yellow streaks that this basil downy mildew has on the tops of the leaves.
Frantic searching underneath the leaves revealed that, once again, my plants were basically done for.
But underneath, they have these brown smudges, which really are the spores forming and starting to kill the plant. So while the plants look pretty good from a distance and they smell good, they're not really in very good shape at all.
Ugh. Basil downy mildew. Dread pesto pestilence. Here's some backstory. Last July, a good friend who works on a local farm told me that they had to pull all of their basil plants out due to a disease. I secretly congratulated myself on having disease-free plants until I went home that very same day and noticed something was definitely up with my basil. Zach Grant, my friend, a neighbor, and the manager at the Sustainable Student Farm at the University of Illinois positively identified it as basil downy mildew since his plants had it too. Served me right for being so smug, I guess. In any event, I checked in with Zach a couple of weeks ago to see if this year's crop at the farm had been affected. It turns out it hadn't been, but then all of a sudden, there it was.
They were convinced, but I was looking at the leaves and I couldn't see any of the sporing, and that was probably 2 months ago, or maybe like 6 weeks ago. And we've still been harvesting during that whole period, and then all of a sudden it was cool and wet, and then now it's, you know, you can kind of see it everywhere.
Is there any hope? I had to know. Zach referred me to a different professional for some answers.
Hi, my name is Diane Pleva. I'm a University of Illinois Extension educator in horticulture, and I'm also the interim diagnostic specialist at the University of Illinois Plant Clinic.
Diane told me basil downy mildew first took up residence in Illinois in 2009, though when it showed up that year, it was at the end of the growing season. The problem now, she says, is that the disease is coming back to us earlier each year, aloft on winds from the south, possibly blowing in from greenhouses where it overwintered. Basil downy mildew is here to stay, she told me, but there is a bright side, sort of.
The good news, one of the few pieces of good news about basil downy mildew, is that the pathogen, to the best of our knowledge, does not persist in the soil in this area, and it's host-specific. So it only attacks basil. Now, there are a number of other downy mildew species that will cause disease on other hosts. But if you have a basil plant growing next to a sunflower or next to a pepper or next to a cucumber, none of those plants are going to get downy mildew from the basil.
While farmers who grow large amounts of basil might resort to many applications of a fungicide to keep their crop alive, this option isn't really feasible for the mere home gardener and pesto lover. The new basil paradigm, she says, probably involves starting our own plants from seed. There's no evidence of the disease being seed-borne. Planting those basil starts far apart and then harvesting early and aggressively to get as many cuttings as possible for maximum pesto. If the grower is really ambitious, seeds could be started and then planted successively throughout the season, though the risk for young plants getting the disease is much greater as the season progresses. Not me. Nope. I am out for the season. There are other pestos, spinach pesto, arugula pesto, parsley pesto, and I even heard about, I kid you not, a carrot top pesto that sounded pretty interesting. In the face of adversity, ingenuity will prevail, right? At least until someone comes up with a downy mildew-resistant strain of basil. Please hurry. For Backyard Industry, this is Lisa Brautz.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with Cash Grain Analysis is Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon, Matt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I understand that your phone's been ringing a little bit.
Yeah, we've been fairly busy. We've actually had a lot of guys calling in talking about, you know, different strategies. And then we've also been hauling a lot of corn out. One of the bigger processors we deal with bought 100,000 off of us yesterday and wanted to pick it up by the end of the week. So I guess they needed some corn.
There's quite a bit of that going on, especially with the backlog of trains.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that, you know, obviously our rail system's a little screwed up right now. And so, you know, some of the processors have gotten in situations where they've gotten fairly tight on corn at times. And obviously there's corn out there. Farmers have been tight-fisted holders this year. But, you know, you've seen a little basis pop here and there. But for the most part, I think they're able to kind of pry it away just simply because guys don't want to hold on to it into the face of a big crop.
Are producers locking in bases fearful that when the glut of the harvest comes that the bases could widen maybe another 20 to 40 cents?
It's a great point. You know, we've had a few guys locking bases in, but I would say we probably haven't had enough. And I think that, you know, it's been fairly hard for producers in this situation, as it usually is whenever the market falls to this level this quickly. It's been pretty hard. Guys feel handcuffed, don't know exactly what they want to do with this market. And, you know, a lot of guys are kind of taking the approach at this point that they're thinking maybe if they store quite a bit, they might get rewarded on in the next year. But, you know, time will tell on that.
Well, with December corn at 367, and a lot of analysts suggesting that these corn has some more potential downside if the crop verifies as big as everybody seems to think it is. It seems to me that options might be a strategy. Maybe some puts and then some calls on the upside if you're thinking you're going to be optimistic about it.
Yeah, I mean, you can always enter into any sort of strategy like that, or simply if a guy knows that he's going to need cash, given that basis levels are fairly decent, still hanging on for most people, it might be a good idea to just go ahead and sell a little bit of cash corn. And then, you know, if you think you're going to get a rally on into next year, of course, timing will be better later on into the year, maybe buy some options. But if you're not going to do any cash sales, I'd agree with you. You know, I wouldn't mind putting a floor under some of this, especially if I know as a producer I'm going to need money this fall.
Why didn't we go ahead and get your prices today, Matt?
Yeah, no problem. Cash corn, 353, fall, 337. Cash beans, 1240, fall, 1058.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing. He is in Windsor, Illinois. Say, have you looked at this website yet, WILL.AG.org? There you'll find all of our audio analysis files, as well as all the key numbers of USDA reports and a link to subscribe to our free Aggie newsletter, all at WILLAG.org. It's National Raspberry Cake Day. In medieval Europe, wild raspberries were considered medicinal. When settlers from Europe arrived in America, they found the natives already eating and drying berries. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, the first U.S. patent was granted to Samuel Hopkins of Vermont. The patent was for a process for producing potash and pearl ashes. Potash was used in soap and fertilizer. Pearl ashes were used in baking. It produced carbon dioxide gas and dough used in the first quick breads. By the way, the patent was signed by President George Washington. In 1859, Theobald Smith was born. An American microbiologist, he linked Texas cattle fever with a parasite spread by blood-sucking ticks. In 1921, there were reports that it rained frogs in Sterling, Connecticut.
And in 1923, Stephanie Kwolek was born. An American chemist, she created a new high-performance fiber, a liquid polymer that, after being spun, was five times stronger than steel with half the density of fiberglass. Kevlar today is used to make, among other things, rope, gloves, and building materials. And that's this day in agricultural history. Listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for our look at agricultural weather is meteorologist Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, we have had pockets of dryness in southern Illinois extending into the southwest. Those have become areas of concern and talking points. But we also have had talk that those areas may receive some precipitation in the next week to 10 days. What can you do to put us in the know on that?
Well, there are a couple of interesting features that have developed over the last several weeks. If you just look at rainfall over the last 14-day period across the central United States, and really all of the United States, for soybeans, it's interesting in that right now conditions are drier than on any of the last three growing seasons, just from the perspective of the last 14 days and focused on soybeans. It's drier right now than it was in 2013, 12, or 11. So that's kind of the background of what we have going on right now, just from a topsoil level situation. Everything is kind of focusing in on next week. We know that over the next 4 to 5 days, there aren't very many rain chances. There will be a few showers here and there, and temperatures do remain favorably cool. We'll actually end up having around the fifth driest July in 120 years across the corn and soybean belt. So cool weather at this time of the year is always a good deal for corn and soybeans, but we still need to see some rain. As we get into the second half of next week, say Tuesday or Wednesday, we do have two storm systems that come through the central U.S. One of those originates from the southwestern U.S., which is where monsoon season is beginning now in Arizona. It's always good to see one of those types of systems moving toward you because they do tend to produce rainfall. But there's a large number of uncertainties regarding that system. At this point, we would only be comfortable forecasting a half inch to 1 inch of rain scattered across different areas of the corn and soybean belt, with best overall chances to the north of Interstate 80 and not in some of those southern areas that you were mentioning.
So the trend for August then will continue to be cool with less than favorable moisture potential?
Well, it all comes down to what happens next week. If we end up getting a large rain system from the waves of energy that are coming through, then that will tend to offset all the issues that might be developing. As far as temperatures go, there's a real high correlation between very cool Julys and cool August to follow. So at this point, we would find it unlikely for there to be a significant situation in which we'd have a widespread heat situation developing later on in August. You always have to watch it, but the big story right now is we need to see it rain next week. And as long as it does, that will help to offset the drying situation that's taking place now.
Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
That's Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.